Are you ready, kids?
Aye, aye, Captain!
Look at me, sure. I'm the captain now.
Welcome to the Supercoach Co-Captains Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Supercoach Co-Captains Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dano, and with me as always, we have Paddo. Welcome, Paddo.
Yes, thank you, Dano. It's come along very quickly. We've got some data and we've got some talking points out of O-Round or Fuck Round or whatever you want to call it. So very, very keen to jump in and help that last-minute preparation, and hopefully everyone doesn't blow their team up like I did today.
Now, Paddo, we've actually got a guest with us, and I was trying to think of how to introduce this motherfucker anyway, but I thought, you know what? The man that believes that the greatest form of contraception on the planet is a bus shelter, we welcome Scobie.
How are we, gentlemen? It's actually, I'm living out a childhood dream as we speak to be on here. It's an absolute fucking pleasure.
So for the listeners, Scobie, can you give a bit of background about yourself and how you stalked us on Twitter and shit?
Don't mention that DVO though.
Yeah, no, that's for the not suitable for work recording that we'll do probably, you know, in 3 hours time. But I guess getting into the Supercoach content, I wanted to obviously increase my rank. Listening to you blokes suggest fucking Tom Barras and Jesse Hogan literally put it the exact opposite way. So it was like the stock market crashing. But I mean, it's content. I always enjoy listening to you fellas, along with other people, of course. But it was always nice that I found when you'd put in a question and it'd be fucking answered. So I really appreciated that. So I guess that's what drew me in, so to speak.
Yeah, we try and answer every single question, no matter how dumbass it is, or whether it relates to Disco Dacos being the greatest player on the planet that you keep on saying, or shit like that. So we'll answer anything. But one thing about you that we wanted to bring onto the podcast just quickly is you've got a really good footy brain with stuff, and like your data on rookies especially and whatnot has been second to none this preseason. So for anyone that wants to check him out, Scobie, what's your Twitter, formerly known as Twitter, but now X handle?
Yeah, so it's at ScobieBryant36. A lot of the content goes to that account, and obviously the other one, which is at Supercoach_Hub. So check that out as well. But the reason that I guess started doing it is because I was looking for it myself. And I didn't want to be going through three different apps trying to find, you know, points per minute, CBAs, the Supercoach score, the time on ground. Obviously, there's some good utilities out there that you can have a look at and scrape all the data together. But I just wanted to be able to look at something and have my questions answered. And I couldn't find that, so to speak, or for what I really like, I guess, when I'm looking at things, just to make it so easy. And then I thought, well, fuck it. If no one else is doing it, I had a little bit of spare time, and then one turned into two turned into three, and then I guess the whole preseason got covered, really.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff there, Scobe. So anyway, we'll get on to the start of this podcast, and that's going to be the premiums for the ruck line, because we haven't done a ruck podcast yet, and then we'll go into O-round takeaways and whatnot. So, Paddo, the first primo ruck that we have on the list is pretty much the one that's the most locked out of every single one, I'm pretty sure, selection-wise, and that's big Brody Grundy.
Yeah, don't have to spend too much time on this. Too cheap to ignore, rather. I was actually kind of hoping he wouldn't score 140-odd so people would jump off him, but hence he has, and it was against Gawn of all people. So, yeah, lock and load. Don't even think about it. It's just what other ruck you go with that really is the question, I think.
Now, that's where it brings us to the next bit. So, Scobie, I'd love to know your take, because next one we've got is Gawn, and watching him, especially like the first half, I think it was on like 55 or 65 or something like that, Supercoach. But then that second half, he just looked sluggish and really tired. I don't know if you picked up on that at all or if you have a different view, but he didn't really set the world on fire in that second half. And is that a bit of concern, and should people look elsewhere?
Well, firstly, mate, I reckon that he just wasn't used to all the bodies banging into him. Like, it really seemed that the Melbourne mids or whoever was around the ball or when Grundy was in the vicinity of him, they literally just ran into him. Like, it was, there was no, I guess, him just getting to each contest. It was just like bang and crash, and Gorn really copped it, didn't he? But I don't know if that's anything to worry about. Like, Grundy just went nuclear that second half. And I mean, Gorn looked really good in the first half, but it seemed to be a little bit of a tension and he just turned to water. And there was a picture circulating. I can't remember who found it, but he was getting his knee looked at as well on the bench. So I guess that is a little bit of concern there. I'm currently in the process of trying to get Gorn up to English, actually.
Yeah, well, there's someone that I'm eyeing off as well that Paddo doesn't believe he's in the top tier ruckman, but it might be my bias anyway. But Paddo, your thoughts on Gorn?
So I think it's worth noting that Gorn's done this before in round one. Technically not round one this year, but he has shown that he's got a 70 or 80 in him in round one, and then he just explodes after that, and there's multiple years of that evidence. On the flip side, he's 32, not getting any younger. And with these new ruck rules, ruckman could choose to be a bit more physical against him, and it could catch up with him. He's shouldered a big burden in that ruck role for Melbourne over the last few years, and eventually it does all catch up on you. And shout out to the Dr. Supercoach boys who pointed this out, because I didn't actually catch this game over the weekend, but last year Maxi would sit a kick behind the ball in forward stoppages where Van Ruin would contest the ruck and Maxi would sit behind the ball and pretty much pluck off intercept marks for fun. But that didn't happen over the weekend. Obviously, Van Ruin didn't play and Shaq is shit. So they just didn't get that. So Gorn had to get thrown into that forward ruck role, and all of a sudden he's not a kick behind the ball where you want him intercepting those marks. And that had an effect on his scoring. So I guess we see teams. We'll see if they bring in someone a bit bigger that might help Max Gorn. But you've also got to consider that he has an early bye and his break even will be high and he could drop in prices. So there's a situation, and I spoke about it a bit last week, where you could jump on players for a few weeks and then go down to Gorn, who might even lose money from his already cheap starting price. So a bit of a play there that we could look at. And then we at least get to see over the next couple of weeks what the role looks like and whether he's just physically old.
Just one thing, just want to point out, Van Royen actually did play. It's just they didn't use him as that forward ruck at all. They relied on Shitshacky. So, but I just want to point out quickly that Gorn and Grundy only play each other once this year, and that was that game.
Something to think about. Good food for thought, but it obviously is interesting because JVR did play, so it's a little bit concerning that, I mean, Gorn was on fire in that first half, and then Grundy obviously overpowered him and looked a lot better. So definitely one to think about.
Yeah. So let's move on to some other options other than Gorn, because I think we're safe to say we're locking up Grundy in, boys.
100%.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, don't know what happened at halftime, whether he copped a spray or just downed some soy lattes or whatever he does, but he went absolutely bananas. Like, that was prime Grundy. Like, absolutely Collingwood prime 120 average Grundy.
Yeah. The first one that we're going to look at is Timmy English, the one that you're looking at, Scobie, to replace Gorn. Obviously, you think he's worth paying up for, and he's got no early buy as well, so that's pretty handy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I just think I spent the entirety of last year's preseason wondering about this bloke with his head knocks and how he's not going to play games, and it got to a point where you didn't want to check the scores of Bulldogs games because English was literally, I cannot remember the amount of times when it'd be half time. You'd have a look and you'd see Bont say 70, and then, you know, you'd see Libba underneath it or just above it, and then it'd just be English. And even the games where he started off terribly, he still clawed it back. So that was just devastating to sit through. I don't know if I want to do it again. So I'm kind of, I guess I'm in the camp of, I'm happy with either, but I'd definitely prefer English and Grundy as my ruck combo.
Yep. Paddo?
I'm actually exactly the same. Not having him last year just ruined any chance of any sort of success, as well as bringing in spuds like Tom Barras. So I'm not going to make that same mistake again. I think it just strengthens the argument that English is the one to target if you can get to him because of there's no early buy. So you don't have to combat that with having two rucks with an early buy. So I think English is the way I'm going. I think there's enough value in other lines for us to be able to get English pretty confidently and not worry too much about the price because he's just going to roll in 120s every week.
Yeah. Yeah. English currently, as we're recording, 13% ownership to Maxi Gawn's 50%, which is freaking bonkers. And I know people don't want to pay up for that sort of price, but Man's going to be consistent as shit. And I remember, Paddo, us talking about, oh, we don't know if Tim English can get through a whole season. Man played all games last year, so surely he's over everything and he can get out there and do another 23, 24, whatever the fuck amount of games it is now.
People might also be worried about the Gawn matchup in round one. He hasn't dropped below 122 in his last three against Max Gawn, which dates back to 2022. So dispel that myth. Tim English will probably run rings around Gawn, and Gawn will let English do whatever he wants. And English, I think, will let Gawn kind of do whatever he wants as well. And English kind of plays as a quasi 7-foot midfielder anyway, so nothing to worry about there.
Yep. The next one we got is Rowan Marshall. Again, another bit of a POD here because everyone's either got freaking Gawn or Grundy at the moment, it seems. So he's 639K and currently in 6% of teams. Another one without that early buy. So, Scoby, like to know your thoughts on Roma.
Honestly, I looked at it and I just thought if I'm going to be spending that kind of money, you just find the extra to go to English, don't you? Like, it's... I don't think Marshall is a bad option, so to speak. He doesn't have that buy with what you said, but I mean, I think you just go up or down. Like, if you're not starting Gawn, then absolutely Marshall is completely viable. Everybody's got Grundy, so fair enough. But I really don't want to sit through Doggies games and not have English there. Like, Marshall won't. I don't think Marshall will hurt you as much as English potentially can.
Paddo?
See, I look at the fixture run and there's some juicy matchups in the first sort of 10 weeks of the season for English, for Marshall, sorry, including Geelong this week, Collingwood round two, Essendon round three, Richmond round four. Giants is a kind of tough matchup. Bulldogs, that'd be interesting. Then we go into Port Adelaide, North Melbourne, Hawthorne, and then we get Freo in Melbourne, which is obviously pretty tough. So that first 8-9 weeks is actually pretty juicy for Rowan Marshall. He's in 6% of teams, so I wouldn't discourage people from picking Marshall as a POD. I think the injury cloud is relevant information, but at the same time, so was the English stuff last year. And if you're worried about English last year, you'd have the same like non-concern of having Marshall this year because he played a full year last year.
Yeah. Now I'm going to change the run sheet, Paddo, because you have absolutely fucking disrespected Kieran Briggs here. You have put him in the next tier below Tristan Cherry. Like, what the fuck, man? Anyway, I'm bringing Briggsy up because Giants bias coming in here. Kieran Briggs is one that a few people this preseason have actually been eyeing off and some that are a bit 50-50 on. And the reason being, and I know in our Podmasters freaking chat and whatnot, that people are like, he doesn't do enough around the ground. He's showing that he is, and he's a contested beast, and man is good, and 2% of teams, it's fuck, man. Like, you can't get more freaking POD than Kizer Briggs. The only thing is he does have that early buy, so without a bench playing ruck, you got no real cover for him, but hey, it's best 18 players, so if you've got cover in other lines, you're sweet. And I'm trying to find a way to get freaking Kieran Briggs in my team for Maxi Gawn, and I'm like 3K short, and it's pissing me off. He's only, what, 25K more than Gawn. Anyway, Scoby, I'd like to know your thoughts, and I know you already sold on English, but let's say you couldn't afford English. Who would Kieran Briggs be up there for you?
I mean, You'd have to have a think about it. The only thing that worries me, and I hate drawing conclusions off only one game, but he only had 69% time on ground. And I mean, that's kind of cause for concern if that's the only data point we've got. And now I'll be completely honest. I really thought that he didn't get around the ground that much, but he clearly does. I was wrong on that, but he only had 14 possessions. So good kick to handball ratio. I think the scoring's a little bit flattering because he wasn't up against, I guess, any decent ruckman, so to speak, even though he kind of lost the hitouts looking at it now. I mean, he only had one more than Cox and Cameron had 10 more than him. So again, I just find the money. Just go up. Like, we're starting from scratch. I don't know, and no disrespect to Briggs, but he's not in that top echelon like English. Just find the money. Go up.
Hello?
Yeah, I was going to bring up the 69% as well for more reasons than just a number, but I think we need more runs on the board to consider paying this much for a ruck. He's played 27 games. I think we just need to cool the Jets. If he has another year where he averages 109 like he did, sorry, not 100, yeah, 109 like he did last year. From 23, 24 games, then next year we can have that conversation and think, okay, he's proven himself to be in that echelon of ruckman. But until he's played more than 50 games, I can't condone spending this much money on Kieran Briggs. I'm sorry,
No,
especially with the early buy as well.
fair enough, man. Fair enough. Let's bring in a bloke now that you've put ahead of him that boggles my mind. Who hasn't played more than 35 games, mind you, and that's Tristan Cherry. So, Paddo, you take it away with this one because I know, again, a few people on Twitter and whatnot are actually starting him at R2. So, what are your thoughts on Tristan Cherry? He's 407K.
Yeah, so first of all, he's 200K less than what Briggs is. So he wouldn't be a keeper. He'd be more of a stepping stone. Cherry doesn't have the early buy as well. Very unproven, but I'd be more willing to spend 400K on an unproven ruck who has now got 100% reins in the ruck over paying 600K for a guy that's played 30-odd games. So I think there's – I can see the reasoning behind starting Cherry – seeing it through the first 6 weeks, and then you can turn him into a Gawn or a Grundy if you're somehow not starting him, and sort of look at those guys coming off their bye. And you can even look at a Rowan Marshall if he's exploding for whatever reason, or even Darcy Cameron. He could be averaging 120 by then, and we think, fuck, his role's changed and he's playing more of that ruck percentage. So I can see the reasoning. It's not for me. I think there's enough value, as I said before, in other lines to not have to jump at Cherry. But if we didn't have guys like Fisher available in other lines, I'd probably be all over Cherry as a stepping stone.
Yeah. Now, boys, do we really need to talk about like Witts and Riley O'Brien?
Nah.
Absolutely no fucking
Maybe
chance.
just quickly on Darcy Cameron, because he did drop 133 on the weekend, kicked two goals, 30 hitouts, and 20 touches. That's a pretty fucking juicy stat line. I know last year they kind of had a 50-50 split between obviously DC and the big American fuckwit, but I think he rucked a little bit more. And again, I missed most of this game, so Scobie, you're probably the one to talk about the ruck split more explicitly. But from all accounts, Mason Cox had a big dose of karma during the game for running through a warm-up and didn't ruck as much as Darcy Cameron. And maybe Cameron could be someone that we could maybe look at.
Well, firstly, I think there's two responses to what you just said, mate. He didn't run through it. GWS just fucking came through. So that was a little bit disgusting. But he had nine more CBAs than Cox. And look, I love him when he's absolutely firing, but he was absolutely fucking shithouse. Like shithouse. He did literally nothing. Like, if we're talking ruck contests, Cameron literally had almost 2.2 times more than him. So, I mean, there is a world where you can bring Cameron in, but I just, again, it's the start of the season. Why fuck around with things? I mean, I think you've got to look at your team and assess your risk profile as well. Because if you're starting guys, say, like five or I don't know. You've got Steele as well, just coming back from his shoulder and everything. I don't think you'd want to be taking a risk on DC.
No, that's fair enough too. Yeah. No, don't mind that at all, boys. So do we really need to talk about rookies for the ruck line as well? I mean, with the whole, as before we recorded this, Naismith's been dropped after his solid performance. So that's a bit disappointing. And Nankervis is back. Do we really need to talk about ruck rookies at all?
No, I think if Jordan Sweet gets named for Port Adelaide, there's a conversation there, but obviously we're not going to jump into a conclusion there. I'm now not starting Naismith, and I'm probably going to go with a Cohen Livingston as a loop option. I think early days loops is really helpful, and having that ruck forward swing as well, you can sort of move Livingston around if Naismith does come back into the team. So if Nate goes down for 6 weeks or whatever, obviously Naismith is a really great trading option who's at a 90 odd already in his three-game average. So I think it's worth noting that I'm not going with Naismith now, and I would be suggesting that to other people as well.
I think it also depends on if you're picking a certain Luke Jackson variety in the forward line. I'm 100% adamant that if you pick him, you must pick an R3 that has that DPP forward ruck just so you can swing when needed.
Yeah, that makes sense. We'll move on to the opening round takeaways, besides the fact that the Giants carved up the Pies. Rookies.
Oh, fuck the big sound in your cow paddock.
How good was the Mason Cox petting zoo out the front?
Oh, no. We'll be honest. The media team and whoever's in charge of all that shit needs a fucking pay rise because it was absolutely gold.
Yeah,
the Giants media team have always been on point.
Oh, and it's, I don't know how you can dislike it. Like, it's not shit at all. Like, they are bang on for everything they do.
Yeah, they do need a pay rise. But we'll go around with the opening round takeaways, and we'll focus on some rookies because there was a fucking fair few. And yeah, Howes from Melbourne obviously stole the show. I think he got a 96 off the top of my head. And with Jake Bowie also going down, you'd think his job security is a bit sound. And I feel like he's probably the most locked in defensive rookie out of all of them. And I know you got like Gibkiss and shit in there, but Howe's scoring potential and job security now for me is like the biggest lock in the defensive rookies.
Could not have said it any better. And he actually looked good, like not from a Supercoach perspective, just from a footballing perspective. Like there was a few one-on-one contests where he didn't look flustered at all, beat his man, sometimes didn't take the mark, so to speak, but just butted up really well and found that outlet option. I don't know what you're doing if you don't have him in your team.
Yeah, 100%. I really hope that Salem doesn't get moved into defence already. I hope they persist with that halfback line, but getting pumped by the Swans, hopefully they don't go panic stations for this weekend. So hopefully we do see him again in that halfback role. And I think even playing at the G, there's room for a little bit of growth there as well, with a bit more room to roam.
Yeah, yeah. I'll move on to Matty Roberts of the Swans. Now, his role off halfback and getting kick-ins and whatnot looked awesome. I think Jakey Lloyd moved up the ground, which is even more reassuring for Matty Roberts and his job security there for me. And it's at the point where I'm now considering fielding Roberts, and I probably will, over like a Colby McKercher for round one. So, Scobie, what are your thoughts on Matty Roberts?
I thought Matty Roberts was fantastic, mate. Like, his kick-to-handball ratio was just immense for Supercoach. He scored a 76, but the thing that I was really impressed by was his time on ground. And I think that coincides with Lloyd moving up to the wing, because obviously they see that Roberts is a future off that half-back line, and him playing 84% time on ground, that's just music to our ears. So, and he's absolutely a fieldable option. Dave got the Pies at the G Friday night, and honestly, if Collingwood try to enter that forward line like we did against the Giants, Roberts will turn up. Absolutely no worries at all.
Paddo, your thoughts?
So I'm actually spewing because I've had Roberts in my team for most of preseason. I've had him since he was in 1% of teams. I had him last year as well, and he fucked me over last year because obviously he got injured, and I did get a 94 out of him once, but fuck all outside of that. Yeah, the role looks great. Not much to discuss here. Like, they'll always make changes at Sydney as long as Horse is in charge, and there's always that possibility that Lloyd goes back into the back line. Roberts is a natural inside mid, though, so if they do shuffle some things around, maybe he does get some CBA opportunities if maybe Heaney goes forward, which has been floated in press conferences as well, and they've got a bit of an inside mid shortage at the moment just through injury. So the role could get even better, but yeah, 90-odd percent time on ground, kickouts, when at 94% by foot and hand, and 84% time on ground, sorry. But yeah, looked great, and I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Sam Naismith, Paddy, what the fuck? What's going on at Richmond?
Yeah, I just think they realised that the two rucks did not work at all. Samson Ryan, the baby giraffe, did not look good. He was exposed badly. Jack Ross somehow didn't make the best 22 in a pretty shit Richmond team, which won't happen again for the rest of his career at Richmond. So he's back out of the team. I think they've just gone with Nank solo, which is a bit risky. But Noah Bolter actually looked really good in the ruck when that change happened in the third quarter and helped get us back into the game. So it looks like they'll just roll with Bolter as that forward and back up ruck with big Tommy Lynch returning. So, yeah, it's an avoid for me now with the Nank news. We've now had teams.
Need to talk much more on the Naismith side of things, Scobes?
Oh, absolutely no fucking way. Nah. Yeah. You can't be bringing a 123K R3 in if he's not playing, I don't think. No way.
Yeah. I'll move on to Josh Gibkiss, the bloke that I fucking wanted the Giants to draft in his draft year. We already know actually how he can score. I think in his draft year, he actually averaged like 70-odd before he got injured. So, look, he is going to be a slow burn, but dude is quality as fuck. And I feel like with these rookies, the eye test is king with these, especially with the next one that we're going to talk about after Gibkiss, even though the dude's not young. Josh Gibkiss. I don't know whether he's a lock as a must-have. Like, he's obviously going to be playing. I'm trying to find a way to get him into my side, and it might be that I have to sacrifice Bont and bring in frickin' English into the ruck for Gorn, so then I get that little extra cash to go someone else up to Gibkiss. But, yeah, I like him. His job security's sound as fuck. So, Paddo, do you want to take away on this one because he's a Richmond boy?
I just want to say that the narrative that Gibkiss played on Max King, is that the King up at Gold Coast?
Nah, Ben.
Whatever King it was, he didn't play on King. And it's annoying me hearing people talk about that because they clearly didn't watch the game. Tyler Young was on King in the goal square and Gibkiss was getting up the ground. And I hate to say it because he was one of my favorite players during the premierships, but Dylan Grimes is no longer an AFL footy player. And when Uze gets the guts to drop him, and it won't happen soon because he is a legend of the club, but it will happen this year. I feel like Gibkiss moves into that role as that third tall intercept sort of guy, and he'll have to swallow and put Noah Bolter back as a key defender. So Gibkiss looked great, actually used it really well by foot, had 89% time on ground as well, which was really, really good. Lots of spoils. Didn't quite mark it as much as he usually would in a game, but that's because our midfield was shown up by the young superstars at Gold Coast. So, yeah, I think it's worth paying up that little bit more for Gibkiss. He's 3 years in an AFL system, mature body. He only averaged 54 in his rookie year at Dano, had some sort of up and down scoring, but he was playing as a lockdown guy in that year. Tyler Young will play that role this year and Gibkiss will be able to float off. He'll play against that second forward that is usually the spud, the Jacob Gazicki's types, where he could just float off and not worry about him and just intercept, spoil everything. So I like him for a sort of 60 to 70 average, if I'm absolutely honest. And yeah, he'll make great money.
Gabe's thoughts on Gibkiss and why you want him at the Pies?
Gibkiss at the Pies? No. The one thing, there's two things to say. Firstly, Tyler Young is one of the worst fucking footballers I've ever seen. He just gives me frost vibes. And if you're a Collingwood supporter, you know how much of an absolute potato that We can't say that word. That bloke was. But Gibkiss, what I was impressed with was the time on ground again. And when I'm looking at rookies, it's pretty fucking obvious. If you're not on the field, you can't score. Like, this bloke was on the field for 89% and he scored 76. So I'm all aboard with that, even at the elevated price. He's got the score on his cycle. I think you just lock him in, don't you?
Or try to. Yeah. Yep. The next bloke, though, when we're talking about rookies, you don't really think of a bloke that's played fucking forward his whole life pretty much and then gets thrown into defence as a halfback and looks absolutely sound out there, and that's Sexton of the Suns. Now, this is where the eye test comes into it because, like, the role is there, everything is there. Dude fucking butchered it early, like something shocking, but then worked his way back into the game. I think he was actually, didn't he have like 8 disposals for 9 Supercoach at one stage? It was fucked up.
Oh, in the first quarter, it was, he was touching it so many times, but he just wasn't fucking using it.
Yeah, sounds like you in the bedroom, mate. Anyway, so with Sexton, you gotta make a sex pun with Sexton. So yeah, with Sexton, I, biggest lock up forward ever, and you got to put him on the field. That's my take on it. Paddo, what are your thoughts?
Yep, 100% next.
Is it a thank you next?
Thank you next.
Yep, sweet. All good. We'll go on to Aaron Cadman then, because this bloke is going to be the slowest of burns ever, but he has West Coast and North Melbourne in his next 2 games. So I feel like the Giants are going to persist with Aaron Cadman, especially with Riccardi being an absolute fucking potato. And look, they've got an awesome spread of goal kickers, so they can keep Cadman in there and blood him a bit more. And he's bulked up a little bit too. Scobie, I know you watched the game. What's your take on Cadman as a rookie? And I'm thinking Cadman just on the bench, but if you could loop him, the next 2 games would be the 2 that I'd consider putting him on field.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I mean, the score looks okay, so to speak, but that score literally came from 2 instances. Like, he kicked a snag late in the first, and that bumped him up from like 7 to 30. Because it was a contested mark, obviously kicked the goal. Kicked a really nice goal. I think it was in the third as well. But besides that, he didn't do too much. This might be a bit controversial, but I reckon this ruck roll's absolutely bullshit. Because if you look at the ruck contests, I mean, you just spoke about how much of a potato Riccardi is, yet he had 10 more ruck contests than him. He had twice the amount of CBAs. So even with Riccardi literally being a spastic, they still want him to be taking, I guess, that second ruck mantle when Briggs is off the field over Cadman. So, I mean, if you're going to pick him, absolutely fine, but just be wary that if you look into the statistics, this ruck role isn't there, and he literally got a 55 from 2 instances. So I guess you can look at it 2 ways. Either he was very lucky to get that, or I guess with the upcoming fixture, if he does that a little bit more consistently, then he might not be as slow of a burn as we think.
Hello, thoughts?
Yeah, I first want to say, how do you get 3 Supercoach in a 68% game time in a 40-point win? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, with CBAs and all that. Riccardi might not even last round 1, guys, and that means Cadman will be the backup ruck. So I think there's room for grow there. I agree with what Scobie said, though. Like, it's not, it might not be as much of a slow burn as you think, because if he can get a couple of 80 to 90 odd scores in the next 2 fixtures, we could be looking at a quick 150K and then flip him on.
Yeah. And that's my take on it, too. It all depends, and it could work one of 2 ways. Either he scores fucking high, or he ends up scoring like Riccardi against North Melbourne and West Coast. There's going to be no in-between with the scoring, and I just hope it's the former rather than the latter.
But then if that happens, you can just turn him into a rookie that you've missed. So,
yeah,
it wouldn't be all bad.
Yeah. Scopes, I'd like your take on Charlie Dean, because
enjoy his bath.
Oh, I mean, he literally got thrown to the wolves, so to speak. Like, the Pies did not play well at all, in my opinion, but I don't think that's completely on Collingwood. I think GWS were a far superior side. And when you're going in with, I guess, Darcy Moore as your number 1 key backman, which is something he's not very good at doing. And then you've got Dean taking the second forward in his first game. I know he's got high raps on him from, obviously, the Pies, but I just... He played well, but super coach option, I don't think so at all. The reason he had such a high time on ground with 96% is because we literally didn't have any other backs to come on the field that were in the team besides Moore. So he literally had to play the entire time. Scored a 55, and I mean, that's okay, so to speak. I think his job security is going to be all right for the foreseeable future, but as soon as Murph's ready to go, I reckon Dean's on the chopping block, and I think there are better defensive rookies to pick from, so to speak.
Yeah, completely agree there. Charlie Dean is one of Paddo's favourites, though, so we've got to include him.
So I think there's scope for the role to change. I mean, I didn't see the game, but Fan Footy has Will Hoskin-Elliott, who is a winger, on Callum Brown playing in defence. So there's room for rotation there. Charlie Dean is an intercept guy. Like he should take your third forward and intercept, and kind of like that Gibkiss role that we're hoping for this year at Richmond. So hopefully, even if Howe gets up with his test this week, hopefully Dean can have a bit more of an attractive role there.
Well, Howe's been confirmed to play. McRae said it earlier today. So if it's going to happen, I think it will be this week. And that's fantastic for us because it's obviously, you can get him on the bubble next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Caleb Windsor's the next one. So he's mid forward, 180-odd K. And like preseason hype was there. Eye test wise, like when he gets the ball, he can do some really good things. He did play at the SCG though. And traditionally the SCG, you have one side of the ground where wingers dominate and then it's no man's land on the other. And it looked like that was the case for Windsor in this one. Personally, I don't think he's a lock, but if you have the luxury of having Windsor in your team, I'd understand why. So Scobes, what is your thoughts on Windsor here?
I thought he had a pretty good game from a footballing perspective. I was very surprised that he only scored a 58, but I think that was due to his disposal efficiency, which I think was around the 62%. Not a lot of possessions. Melbourne obviously traded up in the draft to pick him, but the one thing that stood out to me was he was exiting the defensive 50 and he got ran down. It was holding the ball, so obviously a free kick against. And I kid you not, every single Melbourne bloke ran from everywhere to get around him. So they clearly rate him internally. And I guess if you've got that money to go from a 123K rookie up to him, then it's not a bad shout. But you've got to be cognizant of the fact that he is at an elevated price. So if you're getting 50s or 60s, even 70s, it's probably not cutting it, so to speak. I mean, he's an okay option, but definitely not a lock.
Paddo?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's too much to not start him, but it wouldn't shock me if he came out with a half-decent score playing at the G this weekend and all of a sudden people go, oh, shit, remember Caleb Windsor and how good he was? So, yeah, one to keep an eye on.
Rookie roller coaster. He's probably going to pump out a 100-plus now. We'll go on to, is this Seth Campbell, Paddo?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Fucking Richmond galore here. So, obviously, he actually didn't kick, like, two goals. I'm not reading anything right now. I just remember I'm pretty sure he kicked two goals and looked half decent to good.
Yeah, looked good. But if you actually read the run sheet there, Dano, I said he looked good, but the role isn't great. So, I wouldn't get sucked in by him just because he's a bit cheaper.
And if you read the run sheet, you also said, especially with Dusty coming back.
Yeah. Yeah. He's all right at footy, I heard.
Yeah. Good up and coming, that one. What are your thoughts there, Scopes, on Campbell?
Not for me, mate. I mean, he scored a 70, had 80% time on ground, but he kicked two sausages. So if you take them away, you're probably looking at a 55. So, yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. We'll move on to the primos, or kind of primos. I don't know if you can define some of them as primos or mid-prices, but that have just played the round. And we'll start off with, I was fucking proud of this, Paddo, when we did our forward line podcast and I was bullish on Heaney. And I personally, I haven't actually been burned by Heaney. And looking at Twitter, so many people have been burned by this motherfucker. And I think that's the reason why I'm bullish is because I haven't personally been. And yeah, he came out and fucking dominated. And that midfield role was there. And I'm honestly, he could even rest forward soon and he could just take the piss still too. So he's my F1 at the moment. And I'm going to finally be bullish on something and say, not like other seasons where people have talked me out of it. And then the fucking POD that I had ends up having a career best year. And then I miss out. I'm sticking to my guns with Heaney here and I'm locking him in. Scobes, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Heaney?
He looked fucking magnificent, didn't he? The thing that worried me is Horse was quoted today saying that Heaney will play where we need him. Now, I guess it depends on your perspective of what they need. Like, if the forward line turns to shit, we know he's going straight back there. But they've also got Mills, Parker and Adams out. So you would think, until they return, that Heaney's going to play midfield. You would think. But this is... I like to think of this as just one of those Fox Footy articles where they just change the year of publish and they just literally just send it out every single fucking year. Heaney's going to play midfield. Heaney's going to play midfield. Then the next year, the same shit. Heaney's going to play midfield. I think if you're set on it, by all means, go for it. But I definitely am not because I don't trust Horse at all. I mean, he literally turned Will Gould into a fucking fictional character. So, no thank you.
Poor bloke got delisted.
Exactly, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Like, how the fuck can you trust Force? You might be okay for 3 weeks, and then Heaney's back in the forward line. But is that enough, so to speak? Like, I'd much rather just see him be a primo and then pay up later.
Fair enough. Paddo, your thoughts?
See, I'm happy to jump on, and the reason why people get burnt is because they jump on way too early into someone's career, and then they get surprised that a 20-year-old isn't a fucking primo. Like, obviously. I think we've got a few weeks here of Heaney. I'm not considering Heaney as a keeper. I'm considering him as more of a stepping stone. If he turns into a keeper, then great. I'm going to start him. I'm going to see what the role looks like once Adams gets back. Parker, I'm pretty confident, will play more forward. So I'm not worried about Parker coming back. It's just Taylor Adams that I'm more concerned about, but he's listed as 2 to 3 weeks away as of yesterday from an updated injury list. So I'm okay with seeing Heaney for the first few weeks. We've already got a 144 in his rolling average. And then obviously Callum Mills is 12 weeks away, so that's bye time. So it's, for me, we can reassess at the bye, see how many DPPs we pick up in the forward line, how many Dogs players play forward and get forward status, and just see how we go there.
Yeah. And we're going to move on to the next bloke that, Paddo, I'm going to start off with you on this one, and it's Sam Flanders. Because Paddo picked this to a T in that Flanders would be shit in preseason and then tease everyone in opening round, and boy, did he fucking tease. Now, I think if you look at the breakdown, there was basically the four prime movers being your normal Anderson, Rao, Miller, and then there was Flanders. So the role is there, but they're also playing against fucking witches' hats. So, Paddo, I want to start with you on this one. Flanders, is he a trap or not, in your opinion?
I think he's a trap.
Oh, boy. Fucking Jesus.
Here we go.
Right, strap the fuck in.
I think the way the game went flattered Flanders, for starters. He played 77% game time, obviously got a fair bit of midfield time in there. But he's the fourth guy in line. Like, how are we considering this guy as a primo when you've got Matt Rao, Noah Anderson, and Tuukka Miller running that midfield? Like, since when has a fourth option midfielder been a primo, even in the forward line? Like, people aren't. I mean, he's been ruled out for round. Well, he's looking iffy for round one. But Jack McRae isn't even confirmed to be a centre bounce mid, and people aren't picking him. So I don't get the Flanders hype. I kind of get it, but this has burn man written all over it, just like Heaney of previous years. And I don't think anyone can realistically start with both Heaney and Flanders. just because of those buys. So I think you've got to pick one, and surely you pick the guy with more AFL experience, a better or prominent midfield role as that main guy in the midfield, and someone who's kind of done it before. Like, we've seen it from him. Flanders averaged 80-odd last year, and people are all of a sudden considering him a forward starter, keeper, primo. Like, I don't get it.
Gaby.
Right. You said that he averaged 80 last year, but once he got the midfield role, he averaged 106 over 13 games. Excuse me. He averaged 106 over 13 games. Like, the data's there. You just need to look into it a little bit more, I reckon, mate.
How many of those games did Tuukka Miller miss?
Oh, fucked if I know. Genuinely fucked if I know. But
a lot of them.
I'm glad you brought that up. I really am. Because Tuuk scored 116, and his points per minute was 1.16. Now, let me read out some names that Flanders had a better point per minute than, and these are like premiums that we're talking about. Nick Dacos, Tuukka Miller, Tom Green, Chad Warner, Lockie Neal. Errol Golden had an absolute stinker. But Flanders didn't touch the ball for the first 8 minutes and then went absolutely fucking bananas after it. He literally had the same points per minute as Matty Riau. And yet we're all talking about how Riau was fantastic and had 20 clearances. But I think we're underselling Flanders, honestly, because he's the fourth string in there. But he just, when he gets it, he goes nuclear. Like, he goes bananas. Like, we're talking about that Heaney was absolutely sensational, absolutely amazing. But if we're looking at what they do on the field, there is literally fuck all in between the points per minute of Heaney and Flanders. Yet Flanders was literally, I don't know what happened. Maybe he thought the game started another 8 minutes later. He did sweet fuck all in the first quarter. So I'm huge on statistics, and watching that, like, it just solidifies it for me that, like, this bloke is going to explode. Like, I completely agree. You cannot have Heaney and Flanders as F1 and F2. Like, that's just a given. But we're talking about a bloke that the coach has come out and said that we want to get the ball into this bloke's hands as much as possible. Like, that's just a fucking green light straight away. I mean, Tuuk's what? Is he 60 or 50K more than him? I off the top of my head, I'm not too sure. 50 but 50-odd? Yeah, perfect. Right, so you can save 50-odd K and get a bloke that is guaranteed, absolutely fucking locked in, at worst, top four in his line for a starting pick. Now, I off the top of my head, I could name four midfielders that I think you're going to average better than Tuuk, maybe even five or six. So I just think you can save money and get a better player in Flanders. And obviously, he didn't get near the ball in the official practice game. And I guess that's the risk you've got to take. Like, do you think that's just an outlier? Or is that going to be, say, a 1-in-3 type game scenario? And I think that's where you need to make your judgment. Because if you just think that's a complete outlier, why would you start a midfielder, even a Steele or a Tuuk or anyone around that price, when you can start Flanders for 50 or 60K cheaper and you know that he is going to be top in his line? That's just the way that I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I get all that. I think you need to consider the Giants and the Tigers are two very different beasts this year. And I think we saw pretty much the same score between Tuuk and against the Tigers and then the Giants. And then we saw two very different scores between the both games, with Flanders scoring about 50-odd more against the Tigers. I think Richmond are a bottom four team, GWS are a top four team. And I think Flanders will have these games this year against the lower teams. But when it comes to those contested teams that have really good midfields, like the Sydneys, who he's got this week, I believe, and your Port Adelaides, your Collingwoods, like, I can't see Flanders doing this against those teams, especially if the Suns aren't winning those games. Like, there's only so many Supercoach points to go around, and if they're losing these games, he's not going to get a lot of them.
No, I absolutely understand that. Absolutely understand that. And, like, as we said before, Real literally went bananas on the inside. He had 26 contested possessions.
He was ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely. The second highest equally was Anderson and Hopper at 13. And then Flanders had 9. Like, that's one behind Taranto. And I know, like, I completely agree that Richmond probably aren't going to be fantastic. I personally don't think that they're a bottom four team. I mean, I'd fucking love it if they were. But he had more contested possession than Took. So I see a lot of people that are on Took because, you know, he's had that 120 average twice. And I don't think Flanders is going to average that. But for someone that is arguably, like, I cannot see him outside the top four forwards at all. Like, I cannot see that. But if this is a bloke that, as I said, the coach wants the ball in his hands. So it's going to be there. Like, it's fairly fucking obvious that they're only going to have four midfielders go through there. There's not going to be, like, this hope of Humphrey getting CBAs and all that kind of shit that may have happened last year. So I think Flanders is absolutely a mainstay in there. And as I said, if you're on a midfielder around that 540, 550K, I'd really try and reassess that.
That's fair enough. And this is why we have these discussions, because everyone's got a differing opinion and we won't know until fucking the end of the season who's right. And I'm 50-50 on Flanders myself. I'm obviously going with Heaney in this case because I got to put my money where my mouth is with him. But I can see a world where Flanders is a top four, even if we go worst case scenario, a top six forward. So if you pick him and he turns out to be your F6 at the end, sweet, you still picked one of the top six forwards. So I'm with you there. But I'm going to lead into the next bloke because we've got so much to fucking get through. Jesse Hogan is one that people have been talking about doing the quick cash grab early. And people are only focusing on the North Melbourne and West Coast draw, and then his buy and offloading him then. But I want to point out something that people are forgetting about, and I think, Paddo, you forgot about it too. He's also got Gold Coast, who he actually doesn't mind a score against.
That's not as a good well,
matchup. Huh?
That's not a good matchup.
It actually is for him. And then healthy Hogan, man, I'm just saying. And then even St Kilda. So I get the whole bringing him in for and then offloading him for quick cash grab, but you could actually hold him for another two games, in my opinion, if you wanted to go down that path. And you're already getting roasted on fucking Twitter about this one, Paddo. So do you want to take it away?
Yeah, I'm he's currently in my team, and I'm looking at this as a 2 week thing. And in that 2 weeks, obviously see what he's already got 113 is in his rolling average. If he can get that again against North and West Coast, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility, and I think there's probably a higher upside there against those teams, then we can possibly look at a negative break even going into the bye. And at 419K, or he'll be 450 odd by then, I think that's really good. And worst case scenario, he makes 50K, then I can turn him into a Brisbane player that a lot of people aren't jumping on. Someone like a Dunkley, who I really like this year, but that round two bye is a fucking killer. So I can turn him into essentially whoever I want if it doesn't go well. And I think worst case scenario, he makes 20K if he does somehow not kick a bag against North and West Coast and flick him on. And best case scenario, he scores 120 plus in both of those games. I hold him for another couple of price rises after the bye and then flick him on to a primo at 550K.
Scabie, your thoughts on this one?
No. I can see the merit in it, but no fucking way, man. Like, if you're booking in trades this early already, what happens if you miss a rookie? Like, do you really want to be trading early to accommodate that? Or what are you going to do? Like, are you going to say you miss two rookies and you got to trade two rookies, and then are you going to boost to trade Hogan out? Like, I don't see the merit in that. Like, the fixtures are good. The fixtures are good, absolutely. But there is a reason that he is Jesse Hogan and that we're, like, he's at that price for a reason. He played, like, let's be honest here, he played a defense that was fucking abysmal, absolutely abysmal, with two decent, if you can call them that, key defenders. What, I don't even know what price he is because I literally haven't even looked at him.
He's 419,000.
419,000.
Yeah.
That is about 418,000 overpriced. Like, let's be honest here. Let's have a look. Because against North, last year, 95, scored a 38, and then a 51. West Coast a 95, 110. That's all right. A 50. And then you've got Gold Coast in round four after the bye, 109, 63, 79. They're not fucking numbers that excite me. Absolutely not. No way. No, your right. cash can be spent elsewhere.
I've got two words and then we can move on, Dono.
Yep.
Taylor Walker. Let's move on. 2 years ago.
It actually does happen more often than not that a key forward does come out and just has one insanely good year. Fucking Charlie Curnow last year. Charlie Curnow, prime example. Supercoach-wise.
Fuck, man. I'd kick the amount of goals as him if I had the umpires in my pocket like that, man. That's... come on. What happened in September when the whistle goes away? He goes to fucking water. Do you have Zach Fisher currently, mate?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I do too.
So anyone that doesn't have Zach Fisher and is contemplating getting Jesse Hogan, go to a mirror, have a real fucking hard look at yourself, and then make the change.
Yeah, no, Zach Fisher's a lock. Like that's...
Absolutely. But yeah. Like just for example, I mean, I'd be on the fence that Fife outscores Jesse Hogan, honestly. And that's with the injury history in there. Like Alex Sexton is going to fucking outscore Jesse Hogan.
That's a given.
That's not out of the realms of possibility. No fucking way. That is something I would do to someone if I hacked their Supercoach account.
Anyway, we'll see.
Oh, shit. We'll move on to defenders. We're going a bit out of sorts here. Fuck it. Do we need to talk about Nick Dacos anymore?
I'm not starting him.
I know you're not starting him, but I feel like that he's...
Jesus Christ.
I changed my tune on him as soon as I found out that it was the best 18 in those early buys. And I'm like, okay, fucking just lock him in. Set and forget. So
could you imagine if I could... Do you imagine if I could sideways trade Jesse Hogan to Nick Dacos in
round six?
I don't know what you've been smoking, but fuck me, it is some good shit. No way. Nah. This man's floor is... Did you watch the Pies game? Did you see how badly we played? And that's not because, obviously, we're a bad team. GWS were absolutely fantastic. They literally restricted us and made us play like that. So, I mean, my hat goes off to them. They were phenomenal. But Dacos did not play that well. He really didn't. And I have been so critical of him. It's just been, like, against Richmond in the practice game, in the preseason game, I didn't think he was that good. Honestly didn't. Check the scores at quarter time. He was on fucking, like, 38. No idea how he got there. And this man has 34 and a snag, and that's his minimum. Like, think about that for a second. Think about it. You are getting him for 650K. How the fuck are you going to get him in? Your rookies aren't going to be fat enough. And even if they are, they're going to be decent rookies. So you're probably going to be reluctant to trade them anyway. Like, this man, you say you don't have him. I don't even know what percentage of teams he's in. But... It's 77%.
Yeah.
77%. So 23% of people have no fucking clue what they're doing. How are you bringing him in? How are you going to get him in, man?
I'm banking on Hogan making 100 and him dropping 80-odd.
Him dropping 80-odd, I mean, that's completely plausible. I think that's really plausible. But
and that makes it an almost sideways trade.
How is 70K difference a sideways?
If Hogan is 520 and Dacos drops 80-odd K to 580.
That's still 50K.
Yeah, we can find that easy.
And you might be right. You honestly might be right. And if there's some fucked up universe and seventh realm where Hogan comes out and literally is Wayne Carey incarnated, then I'll fucking hang my hat and say that I am wrong. But I have 99.9% of faith that is not going to happen at all. Like, I don't think it's going to happen. Who's going to play on him? Who's going to tag him?
I think Rowbottom.
But is it really going to be a hard tag?
That's what Sydney do. We'll see how it plays out.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I mean... Either of us could be right. Honestly, that's the beauty of Supercoach.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now I'm going to move on to this next one because I love the write-up here because it says all looked incredible, but early buys means they aren't starting picks. Yeah, I'm starting one of them. That's Jaden Short, Will Powell, and Lockie Whitfield. Now, I'm starting Jaden Short because after watching how Richmond played, the ball, they're so fucking bad that the ball's going to be down in defense and they need someone to take it out of there consistently. So I feel like this is finally going to be the year that Short actually does good, like gets up to like top six defenders. So that's just my opinion on it. Whitfield, I am fucking avoiding. And Will Powell is an interesting one that I would like to wait and see what he does. But Jaden Short, for me, I'm actually starting him. I'm going to go to you, Scobie. What are your thoughts on those three?
I think, unfortunately, due to the buys, it's you can only pick one if you're going to go there. Short, I wouldn't begrudge anyone from picking. Powell, it's definitely a no from me. And Whitfield, I actually had my eyes on. He scored a 78 from 50% time on ground in the preseason. But against the Pies, where he's got that rollback. Like, he didn't have an interrupted preseason. We were told about that he's going to get the roll off halfback back again. And I think he had, like, 34 touches, 14 marks, and fuck all contested possessions for a 108. Now, if that game doesn't scream, you know, 120, 130, even 140, I don't know what does. But to see him score a 108, that's just, yeah, it's a no thank you. But Short, definitely in consideration, absolutely.
Actually, I like all three of these guys, but they're a no to start from me. I'm the same about Whitfield. There's something about this role that's sort of back to his, like, Seagull role that is really attractive, but the buy is scaring me off. So Whitfield is a wait and see. Same with Short. Powell was everywhere, and he played the Short role. I think it's worth noting Jaden Short with his hamstring injuries, so plural injuries last year and the year before, I don't think you can go there confidently, Dano. I think the scoring will be good, but I feel like he'll play 15 games this year.
Nah, I'm backing him in.
I just feel like it'll get to a point where we throw the cue in the rack and put him on ice and play a Hugo Ralph Smith in that role for the rest of the year.
Ew.
Oh, he needs a fucking good haircut, doesn't he?
Oh, what a great mullet.
Oh, yuck.
Yeah, we'll move on to the midfielders then. Tom Green, fucking easy. Easy for me. I feel like you need him.
Not for me.
Nah, don't have him currently, even though he was fucking sensational.
I feel like if you don't get him this year, you're not going to get him again. I think he's just going to be too good.
I still have consistency concerns there. He's coming into his prime. He averaged 111 last year, but there were a lot of 70 and 80 scores in there last year, and I know he had his big spike games. It's just a little bit too up and down for me. I can see him maybe being a little bit more consistent with another year in a system, another preseason, but does he get to 120? I'm not so sure. I want to see it first. The buy is also scaring me off. I'm very big on the buys if anyone hasn't caught the clue. But it's an avoid for me, but he's definitely on my radar post-buy.
Interesting. Paddo, I've got a question for you. Do you have LDU?
No, not currently.
Do you have LDU at all, Scobie?
No, I don't, mate.
Okay. There goes my fucking argument. Because people are starting LDU and he's got injured all last year and also has like games of like 70 and 50, so I was going to make the argument, well, if you're going to start LDU, you're better off starting Tom Green. And honestly, I reckon that Tom Green will be in the top 4 to 5 mids this year. I think it's just him. It's going to be his year. And he's going to clean up disposal in a few games, and that 130 ends up being a 170.
I agree. I think he can be a top 5 mid. It's just that he misses a game in round 3 or 4, whatever it is.
But my argument there is that I feel like that even though he misses that game, he makes it up within. I think someone worked it out that all you have to do is average 5 points more throughout the season and you've already made up that missed game. So if he's priced at a 111, all he has to do is average a 116.
So I've spent 27,000 more and I'm starting Libba.
So I actually rate that. I rate the Libba call. I feel like
doesn't miss a game and is more consistent traditionally.
Yep. But if you talking about age-wise, people are avoiding Rory Laird because he's getting old now, apparently.
Isn't he about 28?
No, he's 30.
Barely sure he turned 30 this year, didn't he? Or yeah, late last like year.
Yeah, but Libba's 1 year older. So anyone that says that they're not picking Laird, but they're picking Libba, and it's because Laird's getting old, fucking pull your head in. Anyway, moving on. Matty Real, what are you guys thinking of that? Because I feel like we're going to get teased by Matty Real a fair bit this year, and I feel like people are going to knee-jerk react to that first game, because there's no way fucking 20 clearances is sustainable each week. He finished second of the all-time since they started recording the stat down. It's not going to happen every week.
Yeah, agreed. He pretty much had a once in a, I don't want to say generation, because he can do this again, but he's not doing this for 15 games this year. He also went at 63%, had five clangers, and had 33 touches for 137 Supercoach. Like, if you're getting 26 contested possessions and 20 clearances, like, Oliver's done similar numbers and got 200s for that. Like, that sort of game should be a lot higher than 137. And I'm not taking away anything. Like, he was fucking, like, incredible against the Tigers. Like, we had no answer for him. But this isn't sustaining, and people are jumping on him for the Brownlow. Like, it's not going to happen. Bontempelli's got that locked up.
Yeah. Oh, well, I wouldn't say locked up, but Scobie, your thoughts on Rao?
I think it was a fucking fantastic game, but you mentioned the clearances. You don't get points for clearances in Supercoach, as far as I'm of the understanding of.
That's true.
So,
but it's the culmination of a contested possession, long kick, and depending on the target. So you do...
if that's a turnover, you're losing points straight away.
But anything over 40 metres in a kick is
effective.
Well, then in that case, it works against him. But, I mean, he's at 571K. That's a lot of coin when you could just go Flanders and save 77K. And I know that looks shit. Like, I think psychology has a massive part to play in how we like to view our teams, because if you've got Flanders in there in your midfield, automatically it just looks wrong and you want to move him to the forward line.
Correct.
He scored more than Miller. He was off the ground longer than Miller, and he's got a better points per minute than Miller and almost the same as Real. Like, I don't understand. Yes, it was a fantastic game, but like, you got to be smart with your money. What are you really expecting? Do we think, if you honestly think that Real can go, you know, 115, 116, then by all means, go for it. But money can 100% be spent better in other areas, I think.
All right. Then what are your thoughts on Noah Anderson then, boys?
No. Same concept. Like, Anderson was good, but yet he's at 586K. Like, again, he only averaged 105 last year. How much, I guess, upside are you really predicting? If he puts on another 10 points on that and goes 115, then absolutely, in my opinion, that's a winning pick. But if he's going at 105, again, just give me Flanders for literally 92K cheaper for basically the same output and a guarantee that he's going to be a top three or four forward.
Bado, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. And again, you have to go back to the fact that they played a really pathetic Richmond team on the weekend. So adding to that, the buy, like, it's a no from me. Wait and see. Like, Anderson could be averaging 120 by round six, and then you've got to reconsider things. But he's only played 80 games, so I want to see it before jumping on. It's too much to spend on a guy that doesn't have enough runs on the board to be considered a proper primo just yet.
Yeah, I'm going to quickly jump forward in this to keep the Gold Coast guys together. Took Miller, for me, is a lock. And I know you guys already spoke about that, and fucking Scobie's going to go on about Flanders again. Took for me is a lock.
This game is all about numbers. Numbers point to Flanders.
And numbers also point to Took being underpriced by, 15 points or whatever it is?
Is he priced at a 98? Is that correct?
That's even more. That's 22 points. Shit.
Is he real? Well, he hasn't gone above 116 yet. He had 33 and kicked a snag. Now, to me, that says that's worth more than 116, yet I don't work at Champion Data and I don't, you know, produce the Supercoach scores. But if I own Took and he had a 33 and one sausage, looking at a 116, I'd be pretty deflated.
Yeah, but at the same point, price-wise, he is getting a similar output to someone over 600K.
Again, Sam Flanders scored more than him and is cheaper than him.
Fucking right on cue with the slam for Sam Flanders.
Am I wrong?
Tuck didn't kick a goal, by the way. He kicked it behind.
No, sorry, I'm talking in the practice game.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm talking like last game, 100 and... What, he got 116, didn't he, Tuck?
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Yeah, 28 disposals, only the four tackles, which, to be honest, I thought he'd have more, and one behind for 116. So right there, I'm like, oh, yeah, 116 for that. Fuck oath, let's go.
The whole tackle count in this game was off because Richmond couldn't get near Gold Coast, and it was a very free-flowing game, and that's why... That's how a Flanders type does get this sort of score. It's kind of like a preseason score. So we can look at the round zero scores, the O-round scores, all we like, but we'll see what happens.
I just think that Tuck has a much better ceiling than like that. That 28 and four tackles in a behind for 116 is fucking good.
Yeah, I'm starting Tuck for what it's worth.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to move on quickly. Jack Viney. Do you think that if we look at Libba last year, do you think, and every year there is one player that's like aged between 29 to 31 that has a breakout year and you wonder why is it taking you so long to fucking do it? And we mentioned like back in the day, Jordan Lewis just randomly fucking going bananas and shit like that when he hit like 29 and 30. Is this a year that Jack Viney could do it like Libba did last year?
He could. I think the Brayshaw retirement helps him. I feel like he might start off really well, but once Oliver gets up and going, and that's not a nose reference, then I think Viney regresses a little bit and Oliver gets back to what he does previously on the footy field. So, yeah, no from me. Happy to be proven wrong here, and he could be one of those random spike years this year. He did average 100 last year, but was very up and down. But the role did change a bit as well.
Scoby?
No. Nah. Nah. I mean, God, you could go there. I mean, you definitely could, but he's also kicked two snags as well in that. So you're probably looking, I guess, I don't know what a goal's worth, but say bring that down to a 125. When's the last time Clary ever went 90? Maybe he wasn't off his tits. I don't know. But then you've got Track that kicked 1-2 and scored a 108. Like, it just makes me think those premier midfielders in there, it's going to be Oliver, it's going to be Track, and then third string is going to be Viney. Like, he had seven tackles as well. He had four frees, four and two against. So I guess that kind of evens it out. But yeah, it's a no from me, but I wouldn't begrudge anyone going for him.
We'll jump to Oliver then, talk about his teammate, considering you just brought him up. Do we just hold off on Oliver and see how he goes, or do you take the punt?
You can't start him.
If this is what his floor is, a 90, when he's probably having cold sweats at night and fucking, you know, shaking in his boots before the game because his good mate Joel Smith hasn't given him his pre-game bump, then fair enough. I mean... 90 as a floor, and I know he's obviously not priced at 90, but this is Clary. Like, he is the fucking Milky Bar kid of Supercoach. He goes absolutely fucking bananas. Again, and I know it's kind of sitting on the fence, I wouldn't begrudge anyone from starting Clary, honestly. I think I like him as a better pick than Petrarca, to be honest.
Yeah, right. Well, we'll move on to Petrarca then. Why do you like Oliver more than Petrarca? Is it because Petrarca looks like he's up forward a bit too much, or
yeah, and if Track could kick, then absolutely. But he's kicked 1-2. Say that's three straight. He's going 125 plus. But think about everything that's happened with Clary. Everything. Like, it's up to you to choose what you believe. But if he's a recovering drug addict, then fair enough. But he's come out with a 90. After literally, I think he played a half in the twos. He was threatened to be traded. They hated him. Then they loved him. He's living with Gorn. He's not living with Gorn. Now he's back there. Like, this bloke has had one of the most fucking hectic preseasons you can possibly envisage, and he's still pumped out a 90, still. And Trak's been uninterrupted, played a decent game, and scored only 18 more points. Like, it just, the upside for Clary is fucking immense.
Pato, your thoughts? Petrarca?
He played a bit too forward for me. He's been in and out of my team all preseason. I want to see how it plays out first. I'm happy to fade him to start with, because I'm leaning more towards Libba than Petrarca. But hey, hopefully he can play enough forward and we can get a sneaky DPP there, because he was very close last year.
Yeah,
he was exceptionally close, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he got to 18%.
I thought it was a lot higher than that.
I think he only got to 18%. And what do you need, 25?
No, you need 35.
Oh, 35. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was something ridiculous, like 34 point something.
I think that was Gorn, but he was not far behind.
Yep.
In that stretch where it was that, was it like 6-game period or whatever it was, he did rest a lot more forward, and that's when people were eyeing it off, and then he went back to being more mid, and I think it finished about 18.
I just think their forward line is that fucking dysfunctional that he has to be up there for a large portion of the game. Like, when's Viney kicking 2 snags a game? Like, that's an outlier right there. Trax kicked 1-2. I mean, Langdon chipped in with 1. Fritch kicked 4. Their forward line just, it's not working, and it hasn't worked for a long period of time. And I don't think Trak is the answer, so to speak, but he adds a lot more when he's up there than when he's not, which is obviously not the best for Supercoach.
Yeah, unless he's listed as a forward.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I will move on to the last bloke, which is someone that I've been looking at, but then after strong consideration, I've left him out of my team, and that's Jared Lyons, who is 258,000. So his role looked bloody good, but after our mate Beto has basically told us, look, Dev Robertson's coming back and whatnot, I've kind of been turned off Lyons, because it won't surprise me if Dev comes back and then all of a sudden Lyons is the sub again, because when Carlton got back into it, they looked way too fast for that Brisbane midfield. And Lyons ain't a speed demon. So, Scobie, what are your thoughts on the Lyons pick?
I think he's extremely disrespected by them. Extremely disrespected. But 110%. That's probably why they're AFL coaches and I'm sitting here talking about a fucking fantasy game. But he only had 70% time on ground. Now, there was, off the top of my head, there was 2 people that had less. And that was Coleman, because he obviously died. And the sub himself, Lohman. So they don't rate him at all. And I've spoken to a lot of Brisbane supporters that have said the exact same thing, that Dev Robertson's coming back in. They don't rate Jared Lyons' defensive ability. But there could be a world, if you're game enough, that if you do pick him and he stays in there for an extended period of time, you'll be absolutely laughing. I definitely don't have the balls to do it at all.
Pato, what are your thoughts on Jared Lyons?
Yeah, I'm happy to try and move heaven and earth if he does pop off. But the round 2 bye also scares me off. So he's not going to move price before his bye. So we've got 3 weeks to sort it out if he does pop off for another 100 this week. And then hopefully, is Dev back this week or next week? I think there's a chance for this week. So hopefully we get a sample size of them together and see the role with them both in the team.
Yeah, agreed. We'll move on to a quick wrap-up of pretty much nearly everything. So we'll start off with the rookies. Who do you guys have as the must-have rookies? Scobie, we'll start with you.
Must-have rookies? Wilson, absolute lock. Sanders, lock. Clark, lock on the bench. Hustwaite, lock. Lazaro is currently in my side. McKercher is in my side. But in saying that, I don't think Lazaro and McKercher are absolute locks. Blake Howes is obviously a lock. Matt Roberts is a lock. Gibkiss, in my eyes, is literally a rung below a lock. And that's probably that's probably it, honestly. And Sexton as well. But yeah, if we're talking absolute locks, if Harley Reid is going to get the midfield time like he did in the second practice game, then absolutely. But if his peanut coach is just going to play him off half back, then absolutely no fucking way is he a lock, because he is not a half back flanker. Like, I know Simpson's trying to mold him and have him have his first year as like what Dacos and Sheasel had, but he's just not that type of player. He was literally so much fucking better when he was in the middle, and his points per minute showed that, and his Supercoach score showed that.
Yep. Do you think there's a world where you can fade Harley Reid?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, if Simpson comes out and says, no, we're going to stick with him at halfback, then absolutely you can fade him. Absolutely. But I think the penny has finally dropped for this bloke that his job actually might be on the line, and maybe playing a kid that is the number one draft pick because he's so good in the middle, it might actually be a fucking fantastic idea to continue doing that. I mean, that's just the thought. He's the coach. I'm not, so.
Yeah. Well, I feel like both Reeds you should have in your team. The reason why I say the other Reed in defense is because of just to start the season with what's that fucker that keeps getting injured?
Ridley.
Yes, there we go. Just because Ridley's down, and Reed in that practice game showed that the reason why the Bombers fans are so bullish on him is because he is a fucking good player, and he's a fucking unit. So at 123K in defense, I feel like he is one that I find is a lock, and I moved heaven and earth to get him in. Howes for me, lock. Matty Roberts is a lock. Hustwaite's a lock. Sanders a lock. McCurch is an interesting one where I thought he was a lock, but considering you got Fisher and fucking Sheasel taking a lot of those disposals in defense, you could fade him now, in my opinion, but I'm still going to have him in my team. Jai Clark a lock for me. Darcy Wilson, fuck, can he play footy or what? He's a goddamn lock. Alex Sexton, a lock for me. Gibkiss is one, again, I feel like that you could fade, because I feel like, let's say, a Reed can score the same or a Howes can score the same as him. Ethan Phillips, I don't feel is a lock, but I understand if you pick him in defense. Pato, you're up. Who are your locks?
Yeah, I think just quickly, because we have been going a while, I just want to quickly check back with Harley Reid. I think you can avoid him. People are forgetting that Ruben Jinmi has to come back into that team, and I feel like he is probably a better midfield prospect with 12 years in the AFL system.
12 months.
Fuck. See, it's getting late. So obviously Kelly and Yo will run that midfield until Yo pings another soft tissue. And I think Jinbi goes in there permanently. And I think Reid will get fucked around a little bit with resting, who they've already said he'll rest a little bit. And his role, I think, will get thrown around a lot as well. So it might be a bit of a Jason Horn Francis situation from his rookie year where the role just isn't consistent and the scoring is shit. So I'm happy fading Harley Reid. The other one we haven't really mentioned is Zach Williams. If you consider him a rookie or not, he is a lock in my eyes. And I think you guys have pretty much covered the rest of it, so we can probably move on. Yeah, I just want to say that it wouldn't shock me if Biggie Nguyen does score okay if he's named as a really good sort of intercept mark sort of guy. I feel like he'll get in over Toby Pink based off that preseason game. So he's one to keep an eye on. He's currently in my team, obviously pending selection. A couple other left field names that could get named. Marty Hoare, Chris Burgess, Oscar McDonald, all sort of chances of getting picked, and Schoenmaker from the Saints as well. So obviously we'll see what teams do to us next tomorrow night.
Yeah, and I just want to point out Dempsey, I feel like, people could be sleeping on him, but I really want to see what that Geelong outfit looks like once they got a couple to return. Fucking, who's that bloke that left Collingwood that you didn't really care about too much?
Oh, you mean the genius that left the year before we won the flag?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, yes, that was homesick, even though Geelong's like an hour away. Are we talking about that guy? Is that the one?
Yeah, that guy, that guy. So they've got him to come back. Yep. You got him to come back. And the cheater.
Oh, the Gary Olshag, the trainer, Rowan. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Him to come back as well.
But so, isn't he 4 to 6 weeks? I reckon if Dempsey survives Ollie Henry being included, then he's a fantastic option.
Yeah, and his preseason game was fucking awesome too. So
yes,
I feel like
was.
People are sleeping on Dempsey a little bit. That just wanted to put that out there. So some PODs with no early buys, boys. Who have we got? Who are we thinking? One of I'm going to say Houston to start with because he's been in my preseason team a lot, but I ended up dropping him down to short. Just to free up a little bit more cash because there was a couple of rookies that I was just short on, pardon the pun. So I ended up sacrificing Houston for short. But Houston, I feel like we could overtake even Sicily this year, and that's a big call.
I don't think that's a big call at all, at all. I'm massive on Houston. That run, obviously playing those home games, and against Frio, he started fucking deplorable. Like, he was disgusting and still shat out a 109. Like, it's just, I was ready to drop him just because I wasn't liking what I was seeing. And then he just turned it around and he was absolutely sensational.
Yeah. Yeah. Paddo, who are some other PODs with no early buyers?
I actually like Dan Houston's teammate, Connor Rosie. I feel like people are sleeping on him hard. He's in 12% of teams currently. People are all over Zach Butters, and rightfully so, even with that ankle injury, because Butters is a star. But Rosie was good last year, like really good. And I feel like Butters has that sort of game that kind of needs attention. You need to put a clamp on him, and that'll just let Rosie go do what he wants. And I think people sleeping on him is not in my team, but he's a big, big watch for me. I'll quickly rattle off some more names that people are kind of sleeping on as well. Caleb Sarong, after a really strong year last year. It feels Sarong that people are sleeping on him. Zach Merritt, I know what's his face, parishes out, but I don't mind Merritt with no early buy. Libart, people are sleeping on as well. I am starting him, as I mentioned before. His ownership is at 7%, which is nice and juicy. Dylan Moore is a little bit of a left field one. People are sleeping on him because of his... he hasn't played any preseason games, and I don't think you can start him because he hasn't had that preseason on the park. He's had some glandular fever, which can really fuck people up. So just don't forget about Dylan Moore is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Mine in my team at the moment is Rory Laird, and he's in 6% of teams, and he is going to rest a little bit forward. Not much, though, according to him. It's just occasionally here and there. If he can add goal kicking to his game, I fucking rate him so highly, and it doesn't matter the fact that he's fucking 30 now. Rory Laird, I feel like if they're going to tag anyone, they're going to tag Jordan Dawson in that team, and no one fucking really tags this these days anyway. And people were concerned with or people were making claims that when Matt Crouch returned to the team, Rory Laird did not score that great. And he actually averaged 116.5 last season with Crouch in the team, which his average last year was 116.9. So a 0.4 difference, not too much. And there was a score in there of 138, 121, 129 and whatnot. So I feel like people are sleeping on Laird. And
that's why you don't listen to Cromnough.
And Paddo is burned by Laird last year because of that round one game. So yeah, that's my one. And if he ends up resting a bit more forward, kicking some snags, I doubt he's going to get the 35%. But fuck, wouldn't it be interesting to have Rory Laird in your forward line? Anyway, that's all I'm going to say.
Yep, nice. Let's move on.
Yep. So the bit that we've been waiting for. We're not called the Supercoach Co-Captains for nothing. Every week we give you guys VC and C options to set your team apart from the rest, and we finally get to round one of the Supercoach season. So, boys, we're going to get your VC and C options because tomorrow night, it could be tonight if you're listening, if I can get this fucking edited up on time, because it's really fucking late. We have Carlton versus Richmond. Now, VC options in this one, boys, if you've got Livingston as your loop, because I'm assuming that's who you're going to be using. Scobie, you go first.
No, I'm not interested in anyone. No fucking way.
No one in this one?
No, absolutely not. Still have PTSD from Cripps from last year. And Richmond, there's no one in that side that you would consider giving your VC on when you could literally, you can go fucking...
Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. Friday night. You can even go Saturday, so to speak, if you've got Livingston, because you've still got, I mean, Bont plays Sunday at 1 p.m. and you've got Livingston that will be locked out at 4 p.m. Sunday as well. So, yeah, wouldn't waste my time.
Paddo?
I'm the same. The only option I would maybe consider is Jaden Short, but I don't think he's even VC worthy in a round that has some pretty juicy matchups.
Neck minute 170. Moving on, Friday, Collingwood versus Sydney. This one I think's fairly obvious for me. That's Nick Dacos because, like, there's no Ryan Clark. And I think Rotobottom would not be able to keep up with Dacos myself. So that's my opinion. Paddo, what are your thoughts here?
We're not going the Grundy revenge arc?
Ooh, that could be a good one, especially if it's up against Mason Cox. I got to ask Scobie. Scobie, does Mason Cox get a hit out to advantage or a clearance for that one that he did just before the game?
Oh, well, I mean, if you believe anything that the media say, you'd think he's a fucking mass murderer. But honestly, he'd want to hope so because he was absolutely deplorable in that game, mate. Absolutely disgusting.
So, Grundy revenge game?
I mean, I genuinely like Brody Grundy. I really do. But I don't think Cameron is that bad of a ruck around the ground. I mean, Gorn literally just went to water. He really did. Brode's like, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a Brody 130 and you still see a Dakes 125 or a 135, so to speak. But no, I'll 100% be on Dacos. 100% for the VC.
Yeah. We'll move on to the next one. So, Saturday, Essendon versus Hawthorn at the MCG. Do we consider anyone in this game?
Nick Martin, but no.
Nick Martin's an interesting one. Very interesting one.
But we're not vaccinating
him. I just want to know, do you boys both have him?
Yep.
I currently don't, just for structure, but I am literally trying everything I can to get him in because he looks sensational.
Just find the money from the 470-odd forward you've got there and easy done.
No, well, my F1 is Luke Jackson, mate.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. So if I do need money, he just turns into Flanders straight away.
Well, there you go. There you go. I actually don't mind John Newcomb if anyone has the balls to pick him for a breakout year this year as a VC. I reckon he could go absolutely boonanas in this.
Nah.
I mean, Essendon's midfield's fairly, like, who have they got in there? Merritt. That's about it.
They'll have Hobbs probably come in.
Oh, big fucking deal. Like, let's be honest here. He's a good kid, but...
Setterfield? The center guy?
Fuck. You mean
isn't he injured?
Oh, probably, actually.
Nah. Essendon, literally, they'll have Merritt. That's about it. Yeah, nah. I wouldn't begrudge anyone from picking Newcomb in Supercoach either.
Yeah, I could see Newcomb going all right. And I feel like that if you wanted to be a bit daring with your VC option, I actually don't mind Newcomb at all. Next game, we have, Jesus Christ. I thought...
I don't know, what is Melbourne? NG Stadium?
That is Giant Stadium. They just changed the name again.
Power Paddock Central, I reckon.
Mason Cox Petting Zoo Stadium.
Yes, now that would be a fantastic name for a ground.
You just dropped the Mason, just Cox Petting Zoo.
Oh, Jesus. You'd have perverts from all over Australia coming to view that.
Oh, Jesus. Giants versus North Melbourne.
Now, get your hands off your Roosters, fellas. Jesse Hogan, anyone?
Oh, move on, please.
I actually don't mind.
Oh, fuck, man. Nah. No, it's Tom Green or nothing in this if you've got him.
Sheasel?
Would you really go Sheasel over Green, though?
Well, this is
I wouldn't even go Sheasel over Hogan.
It depends on how efficient the Giants are, because like against Collingwood, they only had six behind.
Yeah, no, very true. Very true.
And their spread of goal kickers at the moment and finding closer, easier looks is pretty good. So, although in saying that, they could just be having shots for fun against North at crazy angles and getting a heap of behinds, and then Cheezel plays on. So, I don't know. I like Tom Green, though. And I don't mind LDU in this because he actually has scored well against the Giants in the past. Paddy, anyone else besides Hogan?
Not in this game.
Ah, cool. Geelong versus St Kilda at GMHB ABCDEFG QI Plus Stadium. Is Max Holmes actually back?
Genuinely no clue at all.
Yeah, no idea. Geelong are fucking irrelevant except for Tom Stewart is going to go 140 in this game.
Will he though?
If Max Holmes is playing and continuing in with that role, I really don't think Stewart's any chance of getting 140.
That's what I'm thinking as well. Like that, they were just, yeah, they want that ball in Max's hands. Everyone's trying to copy Collingwood in the Dacos role. You got your Nick Martin, you got your fucking Max Holmes. Who else is it now? You got fucking Carl Amon at Hawthorn as well. Yeah, I actually could see Jack Steele going all right in this one. Yeah. Other than that, don't really like too many options. Move on.
Absolutely.
Absolutely it is. Oh, well, we already know who fucking Scobie's going to pick in this one. Suns versus Adelaide. Oh, shit. At People First Stadium. What the fuck happened to Metricon?
Sounds better than Engie.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, no, he's not wrong. He's not wrong.
People First, Engie second. And literally, that's the ladder order at the moment. So, yeah, who you got in this one?
No one.
Yeah, no.
Really?
Fucking no one.
I don't love the matchup.
No.
Don't like it? No, okay. I think there was actually someone with a ridiculously good history against their opponent in this one. Where are you? Nope. He bombed in 2021. Never mind. there was one more that I forgot about. Live podcasting. How good. Down. Nah, shit house as well. Nah, yeah, let's move on. Alrighty. Sunday, Melbourne versus the Western Bulldogs. Who have you got in this one, God?
Bonner English.
Yeah, easy. Bonner English.
Bonner English. There's no other options unless you wanted to go spicy and go Libba, I think.
Yep.
Locked down a little bit on Bont last year, and Libber did get 120 odd, I believe. 118 in round one last year, Libber. And Bont had 107.
And you guys are both fading Bont this year?
Absolutely no fucking way.
Best picked.
Oh, mate. Have you seen how much Seeming gets extracted over Bont's points from champion data? No fucking way. Bloke's got a sneeze and it's plus 10. Fuck no.
Bont's a lock.
Just checking. All righty. Moving on, we've got Port Adelaide versus West Coast. This could be a Zach Bodders, Connor Rosie fucking show here. Actually, even Dan Houston. Fuck me. Dan Houston can pop off a 170 when he wants, can't he?
Yeah, but can you trust any of those guys with the captain?
Well, do you have to do it?
If Dakes doesn't fire, then I'll probably be going. Butters is in every contention with Bont, but obviously if Dakes does fire, then Livingston's going to be the C.
Yeah. So you reckon Livingston is going to be the C here?
There is a very high possibility that he could be the C. Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, okay. Most seed this round. There you go. And then you've got... Actually, we'll quickly... Yeah, you'd have to obviously... pick your set. Oh, this is where it gets tricky. So if you're going, let's say, Bont as a VC and you've got Brody Grundy, yeah, that's sweet. If you've got Tim English and Bont, you're kind of fucked and you can't really do the loophole with Livingston there unless you have unless you have like you do. Who's that fucker that's now rucking at Fremantle?
Oh, Lukey J's going to put like fucking 180 on Big O, mate. No wuckers about that. Yeah.
So unless you have Luke Jackson up forward.
Just put Grundy as your ruck emergency, get him out of the way on the Friday night, and Livingston just sits at your R2, and if you need him for the loophole, he's there.
So you're banking in not doing the VC on Grundy, but instead Dacos.
I'm not starting Dacos. Dacos, I think, will get 80 in this game.
So who are you going to be VCing?
I'm VCing Tom Stewart or Hogan.
You're going to be seeing
no, there is no fucking way that you're VCing Hogan. No way in hell.
I'm tempted.
He's going to do it.
No way.
He's going to do it.
There is more chance of me getting an AFL contract than you doing that.
I didn't know you could play footy, mate.
I fucking can't.
We'll go on to the last game. Fremantle versus Brisbane. Are you even considering anyone in this?
I mean, if you had to, probably a Sarong or... I mean, even Lachie Neal did well with managed minutes, but I wouldn't want my whole round to rest on that.
Yeah, I'm not particularly thrilled with this game.
So Luke Jackson is one that you could consider, but Oscar McInerney is a negating ruck, and that scares me off too much. So I'm not going to suggest Jackson. Hayden Young could sort of get off the chain and have a nice game.
Nah, fuck yeah. Luke Ryan will.
Possibly. He does love round one.
The fake primo. Bang, bang. The
fake primo. He doesn't have an early buy. He's a better starting pick than Dacos.
I'm going to start talking him into Lukey Ryan now.
Oh, goodness. Goodness Christ.
I do want to mention, though, Luke Jackson did get that massive score against Brisbane last time, but that was against Darcy Fort. So
yeah, people need to settle down about that because that was not against McInerney.
Correct. It was not against
Round McInerney. 7 for 65 was against McInerney, but
yeah,
that was with Darcy in the team.
Yeah. All right. Paddo, what's your Twitter handle?
It's at PAWTOSCCC and in plenty of people's block lists.
And another one that's in a particular block list, Scoby, again, what is your Twitter handle?
Yeah, which I think is very unfair because I'm mostly the victim in most of the online encounters. My Twitter handle is at ScobyBryant36 and don't forget to follow the Supercoach Hub, which is at Supercoach_Hub.
You think you're a victim here, man. I didn't even do jack shit and I even got blocked.
Are we talking about the peanuts I think we're talking about?
G'day, listeners. Sometimes on the Supercoach Co-Captains podcast, we really do talk some shit. And sometimes we need to censor that shit. This is one of those times. Anyway, we'll get back to regular programming shortly. I hope you enjoy.
Jesus Christ. And on that note, have a great fucking evening.
Okay. From us at the Super... Oh, fuck. Actually, no. My Twitter handle is at DANEOSCCC. So from us at the Supercoach Co-Captains, I'm Dano.
And I'm Paddo.
Featuring Scoby. This is us signing...
The fuck off.
Go the Giants.